From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Over the next month or so, school will be back in session for thousands of students across the state. For some, it's already back in session. That means losing out on valuable sleep. And in America today, nobody is more sleep-deprived than teenagers. From school and work pressures to the distractions and anxiety brought on by constant access to social media, sleep is elusive for all but a small share of teens. By senior year, just 1 in 20 is getting optimal sleep on school nights. And the problem is getting worse over time. In a survey a few years back comparing young people of the time from those of the early 1990s, 58% more were severely sleep-deprived. Earlier this year, I spoke with two people who wrote a book on all of this. It's called Generation Sleepless: Why Tweens and Teens Aren't Sleeping Enough and How We Can Help Them. Heather Turgeon is a psychotherapist who specializes in sleep and parenting. Her writing has appeared in the New York Times and the Washington Post. And Julie Wright is the creator of Write Mommy and Me, one of the best-known Mommy and Me programs in Los Angeles. She has specialized training and experience interning at Cedars-Sinai Early Childhood Center and the LA Child Guidance Clinic. I first spoke with them in March of this year. Because this conversation's on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought or suggest future topics by emailing us. talk@21stshow.org is the address, talk@21stshow.org, or tweet us at 21st Show. I want to begin by asking you both, what inspired you to write this book? And Heather, I'll start with you.
Yes. So Julie and I are therapists and we're sleep specialists. We've been working with families on sleep for many years. We wrote a book called The Happy Sleeper, which is about babies and little kids. So we've been working with families for all these years, but started to notice that teenagers are really suffering the most of all of us. About 60% of adults get pretty good sleep, but only about 5 to 10% of teenagers get good sleep on a regular basis. And so the book is kind of an exploration of why that is, what we call in the book, the perfect storm of factors that you alluded to there, and then what we can do about it.
So let's begin with where your book does, which is the idea of framing sleep as this sort of almost cure-all, right? And I think it's right to be skeptical anytime someone claims something is a cure-all. What does the research say about the importance of sleep to the teenage brain in particular?
Yeah, the teenage brain is very special in a way that a lot of parents don't realize. We see parents really with their bedside tables piled high with books on sleep when their babies are little and their children are young. But what a lot of us don't realize is that the teenage brain is going through a massive amount of remodeling and restructuring during the teenage years. A lot of pruning takes place. And this mostly occurs during sleep. So teenagers need sleep on a very basic biological level. This also speaks to common stereotypes we have about teenagers as being non-responsive and sullen and negative. And often these are teenagers who are exhausted, especially when you think about the statistics we've just mentioned so far. The starting point, Heather and I always say sleep is foundational. It's like air and water and food, and it's the place to start when you have a teenager who's facing a myriad of difficulties in their lives, whether it be from mental health, physical health, challenges in the relationship you have with your teen. So it's really good to know that sleep is like a magic pill. It can really help with a lot of these things, and it's the place to start. There are more, but the ones we focus on the most in today's world are the mental health, you know, the academic performance, the relationships.
Yeah, and Heather, teenagers are more anxious now than previous generations of teens, right? And there have been a lot of hypotheses about why that is. Social media, we can get into some of that later and how screens play a role in sleep deprivation. But can you just talk briefly about that rise in anxiety and depression? It's interesting to think maybe teenagers would not have their reputation for sullenness if they were just better rested.
Yeah, it's really true that as sleep has been declining in teenagers over the years, they've not been sleeping well for many decades, but their sleep has been getting worse over the years. And as they've been sleeping less, the symptoms of anxiety and depression have been going up. And of course, it's not the only factor, but it is a big factor, because when you don't sleep enough, the brain really changes. So the regions of the brain that are responsible for emotions, like kind of your fight or flight, what you would describe as negative emotions and fear and anger, are activated. And the regions of your brain that are soothing, that are sort of wise and have perspective, and your prefrontal regions, are less active. And the connections between the two are less strong. So you've got, when you're sleep deprived, you've basically got a sort of raw emotional brain. And so teenagers who are sleep deprived can often see the world through a more negative lens. They can skew towards, you know, sadness or hopelessness, or and there are lots of reasons that sleeping less raises your anxiety. One is that at a neurochemical level, it just increases your stress hormones. So those things are really intertwined. And it's kind of, when we help families with sleep, it's kind of relieving to know that if you start with sleep, a lot of these really concerning aspects of teenage, you know, life that we're all worried about so much can get better.
Julie, can you say more about what is actually happening in the brain when people are sleeping? I mean, I think this idea of clearing toxins, you hear, that's another buzzword that I don't know that has a lot of specific health meaning, but you do write about the glymphatic system, actually. What is actually happening in our brains, and in the teenage brain in particular, during sleep?
Yes. I mentioned this massive amount of remodeling and restructuring, which takes a lot of energy and occurs during sleep. Sleep is not a time of what we think of as just kind of checking out and resting. It's an active process in the brain of clearing out toxins. There's also a process that happens where memories are filed and stored in a more long-term way. When we don't sleep enough, we don't retain memory as well. In our long-term memory, we might remember it for a day, but then we're going to forget about it. It's also an important time when we have dreams. Teenagers often lose that last stage of sleep when most dreams occur. And this is really important for our emotional brain, because it's a time when we start to process and make sense of things that we experience during the day. And when we don't have that dream sleep, it affects our mental health in a negative way as well.
Heather, let me ask you, how much sleep then do teenagers need? I was surprised. I failed the little quiz in the book about the optimal hours of sleep. How does it compare to other age groups, right? Because we all know that little kids need lots of sleep, but
This is really interesting, and something that Julie and I were almost shocked to find out too when we were researching the book, is that if researchers give teenagers, I think we know this because we remember being teenagers, or we have teenagers, we know they have like a dazzling power of sleeping. So they can sleep for like 12 hours at a time if you give them the opportunity. And researchers do see that when you bring teenagers into the lab and you let them sleep as much as they want, many will sleep about 12 hours. And that's because they have sleep debt. So they're actually missing sleep that they're making up for. But even after making up for that sleep, most will sleep the average is 9.25 hours on a regular basis, if given the opportunity. And so but then in the research, there's also a tipping point of about 8 hours, where you see that if teens sleep less than 8 hours on a regular basis, it's correlated with a lot of the things that we, you know, don't want for them, the anxiety, the depression, the, you know, academic performance and all that. So what we say in the book and what we kind of help families with is we'd consider 8 hours to be adequate sleep and 9 to 10 hours to be optimal sleep. And very few teens can get optimal sleep. So what we try to help them with is just getting closer to that adequate amount of sleep, which would be 8 hours.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Heather Turgeon and Julie Wright, who are the authors together of Generation Sleepless, Why Tweens and Teens Aren't Sleeping Enough and How We Can Help Them. Let's talk about delayed sleep phase. I was intrigued by this, and maybe I should just say that if I didn't have kids who needed guidance getting ready for school or host a morning radio show, I would probably have a delayed sleep phase pretty naturally. Although maybe I've just been influenced into that through years of life. But talk about what actually changes with teenagers in terms of when they sleep.
Yes, it's so relevant to this conversation. And I think more and more parents are starting to know this, but not everyone knows that teenagers go through a biological shift in when their sleepiness comes in the evening. So around this time, melatonin rises later, other sleepiness hormones, the body just isn't ready for sleep until about 2 hours later than it used to be. So this is something that we used to interpret as just resistance, bedtime resistance. This child doesn't want to go to bed. They just want to assert their autonomy, but it's really not true. So teenagers need us to acknowledge this and to work with their biology. The issue with modern life for teenagers is that modern life in the form of academic overload, activity overload, what technology does to our engagement and flow as the evening goes on, takes that biological shift and just runs with it and extends it and exacerbates it, sometimes for hours. So a teenager who might really be ready to fall asleep around 11 o'clock could easily stay up till 1. If they're full of light from artificial light from the home, from their technology, if they're stimulated by activity from social media, if they have homework to still finish. So there are many, many factors of modern day life that take this natural sleep phase delay and just make it a lot worse.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I experience that even myself, right? If I'm reading or watching a television show at night, I tend to fall off sleep, but if I decide to open up Wordle before it changes at midnight, that often will like delay me for an hour or more of sleep. I guess I'm not alone.
Yeah, that's really true. It could just be like one email that we try to get people to shut their devices off for just that reason, that just one message coming in can make you, you know, interested. It can make you curious. It can make you frustrated or angry. And then, you know, you see something that someone posted on Facebook and then you get into bed and you're kind of like forming an argument in your mind of how you would, you know, counter that point. It just, all the engagement that comes from our devices can be so activating in that way. So, and especially for teenagers, because they have a real tendency to be able to stay up late. So it's kind of worse for them.
Yeah, so we need to take a break in a couple of minutes here, but before we do, just so set us up then in terms of how much sleep is a typical teenager getting, or you know, maybe a few categories of teenagers, and how much sleep they're actually getting these days.
Yeah, so it's kind of getting worse and worse. So earlier on, kids are starting to not sleep enough. It used to be that middle schoolers were doing okay, but now middle schoolers are starting to lose a lot of sleep. And I was just talking to some parents of a fifth grader who is starting to go to bed really late. So it's kind of sliding younger, but generally speaking, elementary schoolers sleep pretty well. And then in middle school, for various reasons, kids start to go to bed later. And then by high school, they're going to bed later, and high school start times in a lot of cases are way too early. So that's really where the crunch comes in. And so by their senior year in high school, the average kid is sleeping about 6.5 hours a night. And if you consider that they would like to sleep about 9, that's about 2.5 hours of missing sleep every night for a high school senior. And, you know, so it really declines in middle school, but it gets to a real crisis point at some point in high school around junior or senior year.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. We're speaking with Heather Turgeon, a psychotherapist who specializes in sleep and parenting, and Julie Wright, the creator of Right Mommy and Me, a very well-known program in Los Angeles. Together, they are the authors of the book Generation Sleepless: Why Tweens and Teens Aren't Sleeping Enough and How We Can Help Them. I first spoke with them back in March. We're revisiting that conversation today as many students are going back to school and many of them have very early morning start times. We need to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back. Before we do, I want to urge you to visit our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can subscribe to our podcast and catch up with recent episodes, such as last week's interview with Alec Navala Lee, another author, this one based in Illinois. He wrote a book about Buckminster Fuller. It's called Inventor of the Future, The Visionary Life of Buckminster Fuller, who himself had a number of Illinois connections. He made many of his most groundbreaking sort of advances in Chicago, also was on the faculty at Southern Illinois University for a time. You can find that conversation and many others, again, on our website, 21stshow.org, or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, more to come with the authors of Generation Sleepless when we return. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Heather Turgeon and Julie Wright, co-authors of Generation Sleepless: Why Tweens and Teens Aren't Sleeping Enough and How We Can Help Them. We're talking about why sleep is so important for teenagers, but also especially hard to get. Because this conversation was first broadcast earlier this year, we're not taking calls, but we'd still love to hear what you thought about this show. Talk at 21stshow.org is the address. You can also tweet us at 21stshow. And one note, you're going to hear one of our guests talk about daylight saving time starting soon. Obviously, that is because we recorded the conversation back in March. I'd like to read a message we got from our texting group. Ryan wrote us to say, "As a teen, I remember sleeping a couple hours a night, Monday through Friday, and then sleeping more than 16 hours per day over the weekend. This was the early 2000s. I wonder if it was because I was overscheduled with school, homework, or extracurriculars. But at night, I felt like I had time to do the things I was interested in. I remember staying up, had a feeling of freedom. No one was watching me or expecting anything from me. I also remember thinking staying up late was about experimenting with my body, seeing how far I could push things past what I was told I was supposed to do." So, Julie, how much of sleep issues for teenagers are biological, just not being tired at night, and how much of it is, you know, cultural pressure, school, a job, things like that?
Yes. You know, we wrote the book because we wanted to ring the alarm bell on all these social factors. Some of them are out of parents' control to a large degree, things like academic overload, too much pressure from college admissions, which bring teens to put, you know, take on too many activities, big technology and all that it brings to the evening. But at the same time, we really understand how teenagers feel, how they want to be autonomous, and how they want to have that time at the end of the day. A lot of the times today's teens stay up later once they've got their homework done, because they haven't had any time to connect and to be with their friends and to relax and to not have anybody telling them what to do. So that is really valid. We really also talk a lot in the book about helping a teen become self-motivated to get more sleep. We can't just tell teenagers to go to bed early and tell them that it's good for them. We need to sort of really do a good job of listening to them, to what they care about, and using those opportunities. They might talk about wanting to grow taller, do better in sports, do better in school. They might talk about their appearance and wanting to look better. They might just say they don't feel great. And those are opportunities as a parent to just listen and to empathize and to take the time to let your teen feel that you're on their side and you are not telling them what to do, but you're helping them come to the conclusion that going to bed a little bit earlier could help with these things. You're going to do that with more with education about sleep and talking about your own sleep and your own quest to learn more about sleep and do better. So it's a tricky quest to try to get your teen to bed earlier. It's not the same as putting your baby to bed earlier. It really Right. takes a lot of relationship building, communication, effective listening. And the goal is to have a teenager who makes choices intrinsically from their own motivation, their own reasons why, their own level of principle, and has these good habits for life.
You know, something you said there really struck me, and that's, you know, setting the example, talking about your own sleep habits. And sometimes that can be bad, right? Like it's a do as I say, not as I do, right? And we had this conversation on the show last year about revenge bedtime procrastination. I mean, I myself tend to stay up late and I value that time to myself. I wouldn't use the word revenge to describe it, but, you know, what about how much do you see in, I wonder, in your practices of bad parent sleep habits or suboptimal parent sleep habits trickling down to the young people in their lives?
Yeah, I would say that's a really powerful force, and it starts early. So we try to get parents of elementary schoolers to start really thinking about this, or even earlier, because our kids are really taking their cues from us. And if the priority for us, if we actually talk about sleep, as in, you know, we ask parents to say things to their younger kids like, you know, once I put you to bed, I'm going to climb into bed and read my book. I can't wait. You know, I'm ready to get cozy. And just to talk about sleep in a neutral kind of, you know, interested way. Like sleep is, we like to say that sleep is not something you have to do. It's something you get to do. And that's something you can think about as early as possible when your kids are young, because it really sets the tone. A lot of families have what we call a sleep leftover approach. So as you described earlier, it's like the sleep is the thing that happens at the end of the day when all the other things are done. And if you think of it that way, it's always going to be a struggle. You're always working against the grain. If you think of sleep as a priority and you put it forward and arrange other things around it, and you talk about that as the grown-up, as the parent, it's just so much easier to make all these things happen.
What have we seen in the pandemic about sleep patterns? Is there anything we've learned about that, or just seen an effect on young people because of the school changes and everything else that's been happening with the pandemic?
Yes, definitely. Early on in the pandemic, research shows that teenagers started to get a little bit more sleep. They didn't have to get up as early. They didn't have to commute to school. School started a little bit later for a lot of teenagers. They could just roll over in bed at 9:05 and turn their Zooms on. So initially, they started getting a little more sleep, and they were probably more in tune with their biological clock at that time, staying up a little later and sleeping in a little later in the morning. So they were probably more in sync with what their bodies really wanted. But then what happened over time is that aspects of their lives, like anxiety, isolation, spending too much time in their bedrooms, having, you know, just no cues from the outside world, caused their bedtimes to shift even later. So even though they didn't have to get up as early in the morning, their sleep was still squeezed at bedtime, and they started getting overall less sleep. So there was an initial improvement, and then ultimately things got worse again.
So we talked a little earlier about some of the things that we as families can do to try and, I think as you said, self, you know, get teenagers self-directed into or self-motivated for better sleep. What about some of the broader policy changes? You mentioned school start times, and that one really resonated with me. I've been out of high school for more than 25 years now, but I can still remember, struggling to wake up, being up late, doing homework or other things. We didn't really have video games the way people do now, back then that sucked up so much time, but it was a struggle, and my school started at 7:45 or 7:50 in the morning. Talk about that. Are there places that are working on this?
Yes, it's really true. And I have the same memory. Julie and I have talked about this many times, but I remember waiting for the school bus in the dark, and I lived in the Northeast. It was cold. My hair was frozen. And that was just what it was. Yes. I didn't think I really ever thought about it at the time, but what researchers really found out starting in the 90s was that high school start times go just against the biology of a teen. So for all the reasons we've been talking about, it's really unhealthy for them to start early. And the American Academy of Pediatrics kind of sets the tone for this by saying 8:30 or later is healthy for middle and high school. And that's kind of patchwork around the country in terms of who's doing what, who's listening to the science, who is, taking that information and making good policy changes. So some individual schools are changing. It's in California exciting that the state, beginning in the fall, the state has passed a law that no high school can start earlier than 8:30. So that's going to be statewide in California, which is really pretty, pretty cool. And states like New York are considering the same.
I love it. It's high school start time at 10 o'clock, optimal.
Yeah, that would be the most healthy.
I want to read a couple more texts on this point. Franny wrote, "We should stay on daylight saving time all year. High school should never start before 9 a.m. And we also heard from someone who says, "I do not have a comment on sleeplessness, but I am trying to get out the word on my proposal. Spring forward should happen at 4 p.m. on Friday. We are choosing to deprive ourselves of sleep each spring. It is madness." What about daylight saving time? Is that a significant factor or just one among many?
It's definitely a factor. During daylight saving time, which is about to start, we all know that we're changing our clocks on March 13th this year. We're springing forward, so we'll have an extra hour of daylight at the end of the day. The problem comes for teenagers especially, but for all of us, is that during daylight saving time, we actually all get less sleep. We stay up later, but we still have to get up at the same time in the morning. And during the summer, we like to say, daylight saving time seems so appealing because of these long evenings, and summer evenings seem so lovely. And what it really means is that we like summer. The days lengthen in summer regardless. But the issue with keeping daylight saving time all year round is that we've never experienced it in the winter. The way it translates in the winter is as the days shorten, the mornings get darker and darker. And this is an even bigger problem for our teenagers whose night is already cut short, who have to get up in the morning. We haven't talked about this yet, but early morning sunlight is really helpful to regulating the body clock of a teenager in particular. So if they have to get up in the morning and don't have any exposure to bright early morning sun, it makes it harder for them to fall asleep that evening. So now we have a cycle where they have trouble waking up, they feel very groggy, they don't have any chemicals coming into their brain that alert them and wake them up and help them focus. They might go to school in the dark, they might take a calculus test having never seen a ray of sunlight. And then at the end of the day, they have trouble falling asleep because they're exposed to so much light in the evening.
Interesting. That's the first time I've ever heard that case articulated, because I do find that idea of daylight saving time year round appealing. But that is interesting. In the time we have left, I also want to talk about tech companies and the role of technology in this. And there's been a lot of attention lately on the negative effect that these companies can have on teenagers, from social media channels nudging young women toward eating disorders to the rise in depression caused by having this real-time connection to all of one's peers. But what about sleeplessness? What responsibility do tech companies have with regard to sleeplessness?
Yeah, it's, you know, kind of for those reasons that you just mentioned, technology really gets in the way of sleep because it keeps us awake through, you know, the exposure just to light coming into our eyes, which suppresses melatonin and can just, you know, make us just legitimately not feel tired. And then that more psychological feeling that we have of needing to be connected and know what other people are doing. And it kind of provokes our wondering, you know, self-evaluation. Am I doing enough? Am I enough? What's the other person doing? Let me check. Teens are very connected to each other way too late in the evening. And Julie and I we like to say that earlier on in the day, we should really give them the opportunity to fill up on connection. We call it vitamin C. So one of the things we suggest is for high schools to really be very clear about their cell phone policy. We'd love for high schools to have zero cell phone use so that teens can really look each other in the eye and connect and like fill up on that connection during the day and have some time earlier in the day and right after school to really be with each other, not on phones, so that when they do get towards the end of the evening, they feel more filled up on that. And so technology companies, I see it as a real opportunity to think about smart technology, sleep-friendly technology, if there really is such a thing. I think the responsible design conversation, like how can we design platforms and social media to just be less intrusive when it comes to sleep, like, you know, more of an ability to set your own desire to wind down and have your phone actually tell you, hey, you said you wanted to wind down at, you know, 9 p.m. It looks like it's 9 p.m. And maybe it vibrates a little bit until you finally scroll away from your social media and put it down. There are definitely ways for technology companies to be more sleep friendly.
I've gotten pretty good at ignoring the bedtime reminder I set on my phone now. Julie, just a couple minutes. You have a sleep challenge at the end of the book. Maybe you can just share one or two things that families can do to help their teens and tweens get better sleep.
Yes. We love to talk about the routines. These are routines. We all know what a bedtime routine is, but we add on a wind down routine, which precedes the bedtime. And we also add on a morning routine. So we encourage families to do a sleep challenge together, or a teenager could do it with a group of friends or a team or something like that if they don't want to do it with their family. But it's powerful to do it with the family. The wind down routine is very simple, and it just starts to send signals to the biological and the psychological centers. So we start to simulate sunset by starting to lower the lights in the home, whether that be bright overhead lights in the winter or pulling blinds and curtains in the summer, so that we start to trick the internal clock into thinking that the sun is setting. This is one of the most powerful things we can do to make falling asleep easier. We also advocate, as Heather said earlier, turning off all screens and making sure that bright light doesn't enter our eyes. Then it follows the bedtime routine, which, you know, we're taking away things that people really like in today's world, like you're mentioning technology, but let's add in some things that you also remember from being a teenager. Let's add in watching a TV show on a TV from the distance. Let's add in something. What we're really talking about are passive distractions, where you're not interacting or, you know, completing your Wordle, but where you're really.
Right. And I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Heather Turgent and Julie Wright, thank you so much for being with us on the 21st.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.